Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 240, and today is 11 March. So I did an episode yesterday. I thought I'd do one more today. I don't know if I'll get to it this week, but I had some time. Very short episode. Very short episode. I think only six stories. But we'll get started with CENTCOM X, 11 March, Red Sea update between 8:50 a.m. and 12:50 p.m. About 4 or 5 hours. Local time on 11 March today. Iran-backed Houthi terrorists fired two anti-ship ballistic missiles from Houthi-controlled areas into the Red Sea toward merchant vessel Pinocchio, a Singaporean-owned Liberian flagged ship. The missiles did not impact the vessel, and there were no injuries or damage reported. Between 2:50 p.m. and 11:30 p.m. local time on March 11, U.S. CENTCOM forces conducted 6 self-defense strikes, destroying an unmanned underwater vessel and 18 anti-ship missiles in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. 18. So, you know, every day it's something different. More of the same, though, I guess, right? Moving on. So this is a little bit more stuff from Rafah and Israel. This is from Jerusalem Post. This is from the staff, dated 12 March, so they're ahead, time zone-wise. Biden versus Netanyahu, could military aid to Israel become conditional if Rafah is invaded? This is a report. This is a question, not in the article. Is the media, are people making more of this heat between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden more than it is? I don't think there's heat between them. I think there's probably natural tension. They've probably known each other for 100 years. They probably didn't like each other the first day they met, or didn't, you know what I mean? I don't think there's anything there. I think whatever's there has probably been there since the first day they've met. And that maybe it's a little exasperated, if that's a word, because of the crisis that's going on there now, the war that's going on there now. But I think if you watch what the president of the United States does, not what he so much says, you'll get how he really feels about Israel and Prime Minister Netanyahu and all that. So I think this is probably more than is actually there. That's what I think. So here's the story. Military aid to Israel could become conditional by U.S. President Joe Biden should Israel decide to launch an incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, a Monday political report cited 4 U.S. officials as saying. No name of these 4 U.S. officials, of course. The 4 U.S. officials in question is no internal U.S. administration thinking, the report notes, with one of them saying it's something he's definitely thought about. Again, not in the article. I don't think president is going to put any sort of, conditions on Israel. I think these 4 people, unnamed, of course, maybe he's thinking about it, but I don't think he's going to do it. Not in the article. That's just me saying that. Moving on. The news also comes as reports of high tensions between Biden and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where the former President Biden accused the latter, Prime Minister Netanyahu, of undermining the values on which Israel was founded and harming the country with his handling of the Gaza war in an MSNBC interview on Saturday. Of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu says in response that such accusations are false. The United States president said he would continue to provide arms to the country, such as the Iron Dome, and that mass civilian casualties in Gaza is a red line for him, the report noted. This possible decision President Biden could make is also a result of such an Israel operation in Rafah, the political report noted, stating that the status of sending aid becoming conditional would pressure Israel to shift its approach on Rafah. I think Israel has been pretty darn clear on their approach of Rafah. I don't understand why there's so many questions about it. There's 6 battalions left from Hamas, 4 are in Rafah. They think the hostages are in Rafah. They're going to go into Rafah, but they got to take care of the civilian problem first. I think they recognize that. Plus, there's no deal with the hostages. Release the hostages and they don't go into Rafah, I think. Moving on. White House Deputy Press Secretary Olivia Dalton informed Politico of Biden's belief that there are other approaches which can be taken and are taking that are more effective, and said it is not productive to assign a red line sort of terminology to what is a very complex set of policies. I agree with that. Despite President Biden's warnings and criticism, Prime Minister Netanyahu has told German media company Axel Springer that Israeli forces would enter Rafah, and that his red line is that 7 October doesn't happen again. An IDF official has said that such an incursion wasn't imminent due to the need to evacuate civilians in the area and the preparation of IDF soldiers. The report said the United States needs a credible and implementable plan from Israel before giving implicit green light for an advance into Rafah, but that any added time could be used by Hamas as an advantage. That's it. End of story. Not a long story, but let's kind of know what the latest update is on that. The next 3 stories are from Defense Post. Not very long stories, but very, very good stories. The first one, French defense firms produce weapons in Ukraine. Inderbish, 11 March. French companies plan to produce military equipment in Ukraine to help Kiev bolster its war efforts. That's from Defense Minister Sebastien Lecornu. He said last week. Pardon me real quick. Clear my throat. The first production unit could commence as soon as this summer, he said, whatever the production unit is. That's me adding that, not the article. Here's a quote. 3 French companies will be setting up partnerships with Ukrainian companies, in particular in the drone and land equipment sectors, to produce spare parts on Ukrainian soil and perhaps ammunition in the future. That's from France 24, quoted Lecornu as saying, hinting that the companies could include Franco-German tank producer KNDS and drone maker Delair. Lecornu also confirmed the purchase of 200 Aster surface-to-air missiles from MBDA, some of which would be sent to Ukraine. France has provided $4.15 billion U.S. dollars of aid to Ukraine from 24 Feb 22 to 31 December 23, which includes military equipment worth $2.86 billion or 2.62 billion euros. Some of this equipment delivered has been 30 Caesar self-propelled truck howitzers, which we've talked about in the past, a SAMP-T air defense system, and an unspecified number of Scalp long-range air-launched cruise missiles. In addition, France has trained 10,000 Ukrainian soldiers in Poland and France. Good story there. Next. Here's a U.S. Army, there's an ISV story, infantry squad vehicle, by GM Defense, Rojef Manuel, 11 March. GM Defense completes infantry squad vehicle trial for UAE. Very interesting here. General Motors segment of GM Defense has concluded testing of an infantry squad vehicle for UAE and partner countries. The tests were held over several days during Abu Dhabi's annual Armed Force Summer Trials, validated the system's tactical capability across rugged conditions with diverse terrain and extreme weather. Not in the article, but of course the U.S. Army is going to get ISVs, infantry squad vehicles. They hold 9 soldiers. They're unarmored. They're going to the light formations. I don't know if they've been fielded yet. I think they have been fielded. But anyway, there's other countries looking into them. Moving on with the article. This test or process saw the system maneuver 2,000 kilometers over sand dunes, highways, and challenging tracks while carrying payloads. Wonder what the payloads were. Alongside mobility demonstrations, the ISV took a maintenance trial that involved a 2-day repair sequence as well as additional sustainment and recovery evaluations. Here's a quote from GM Defense President Steve Dumont. He said, through completion of all phases, we've demonstrated that we can successfully leverage the advanced technologies of our parent company, General Motors, to deliver a highly capable off-road vehicle that can meet the needs of defense and government customers in the UAE and throughout the region. the ISV summer trials in the Middle East followed the signing of a cooperative agreement between the North Carolina company and UAE's military acquisitions arm, Tawazun Council, in February of 23. This strategic cooperation served as an initial step in delivering future solutions supporting Emirati warfighters while boosting the country's local defense industrial base. Here's a quote from GM from last year. Priority opportunities covered a memorandum of understanding, including cooperative research and development, regional production and assembly, post-production support, and global logistics focused on key technology areas of integrated vehicles, power, propulsion, including fuel cell and power generation, autonomy, and connectivity. The ISV is based on the Chevy Colorado ZR2 midsize truck. It uses 90% of commercial off-the-shelf parts. It holds up to 9 people, which we talked about. It has a 2.9-liter engine with 275 horsepower. It can be loaded on a UH-60, a CH-47, Chinook, CH-53C Stallion, or deployed through low-velocity airdrop on the battlefield by the C-17 Globemaster III, C-130 Hercules, and A-400M Atlas cargo aircraft. Platform can be armed with anti-drone laser energy weapons. I think we did an article about that a while back. Haven't heard any more on that. M240 Bravo machine guns, M2 heavy machine guns, and Mark 19 grenade launchers. I haven't seen those armed before, but we did do an article on the direct energy one, which is very interesting. I'd like to see that one up front, up close. And that's it. Next story. Again, Defense Post, U.S. Army urged to prioritize river crossing capability for future conflict. Joe Sabala, 11 March, U.S. Army should invest more in wet gap crossing capabilities to prepare its role in future conflict. This is a paper published by AUSA, also known as Association of the United States Army. Also known as river crossing, wet gap crossings refer to troops, tanks, and wheeled artillery weapons having to ford inland water obstacles to reposition or seek out enemies. It involves the deployment of boats and bridges, and it also requires extensive planning and preparations. This paper by AUSA noted that the U.S. Army has not conducted a contested wet gap crossing against a near-peer threat since the Second World War, and it needs more to do. It suggests the need to conduct more drills and modernize its bridge-laying assets. The author of this paper is Major Adida Iyer, and the major writes, after 2 decades of counterinsurgency operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, U.S. faces emerging threats in China and Russia, obviously. The author continues, the Army must be prepared to conduct large-scale combat operations against these near-peer threats. In particular, the U.S. military should be prepared to conduct wet-gap crossing operations against a well-organized and technologically advanced force. The AUSA paper referenced the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine, in which invading forces, I think they mean Russia, attempted to cross the Seversky-Donets River, the fourth longest river in Ukraine. Kiev forces reportedly thwarted, there's that word, thwarted, the effort with the help of small drone reconnaissance. Russian troops failed to employ combined arms effect to assist in the crossing, according to the report. I'll stop right there. So wet gap crossings. One story left. That's it. We'll be done. Again, I'm doing some short episodes here for the next week or so. Last story from Ashley Roquet. Today, 11 March, the budget's out. Of course, the United States hasn't passed the 24 budget, but the Pentagon has already prepared their 25 budget. And this is a story on the 25 budget, at least from the Army perspective. Interesting stuff. They're killing IRCA, I guess. The Army's $186 billion budget request shuffles artillery aviation plans. So I think the whole budget is, wait a minute, I wrote it down. It's over $800 billion, obviously. Do I have that number? Shoot, I don't have that number. It's over $800 billion. The Army is requesting $185.8 billion, 22% of it. Air Force is requesting $262.6 billion, 31% of it. The Navy is requesting $257.6 billion, 30% of it. And then other defense is $143.7 billion, 17%. So if you add it all up, it's 800 and something. But back to this article. U.S. Army leaders unveiled a $185.9 billion spending plan today. They say it's designed to keep most weapon modernization programs moving ahead, despite cutting bait on a high-profile artillery program, the IRCA, and shifting aviation dollars around, which we've talked about many times, and we'll talk about it again. The White House delivered its FY25 budget request to the lawmakers with an $849 billion in discretionary spending included for the Pentagon. So it's $849 for everybody. The Army's is $185.9. There we go. As the plan stands now, the FY25, the Army is requesting $70 billion for military personnel coffers to support a force of 442,300 active duty soldiers. I think she's got an extra zero in there, not 3,000, it's 300. 325,000 Army National Guard and 175,800 reservists. The service is requesting $71.4 billion for O&M. 14.1 for research and development and 24.4 for weapons procurement. Now, that's interesting to me. Remember, the Honorable Doug Bush last year said he'd rather spend more money on procurement than research and development, and it looks like he's doing that. So 14.1 for research and development, 24.4. Kind of almost twice as much on procurement, which is good news for the Army, and $3.9 billion for military construction. Today's budget submission highlights one weapon decision. The Army has halted work on extended range cannon artillery platform, IRCA. Kind of sad to see that one halted. For several years, it had been integrating and testing the addition of a 30-foot, 58 caliber gun tube to the BEA Systems Paladin M109A7 self-propelled howitzer, obviously 155. The goal was to use modified artillery platform to launch 155 rounds out to 70K, an increase from the current range up to 30K, so doubling the range of a 155. I thought it was a good program. After IRCA platform encountered technical challenges during live fire testing, including excessive wear and tear on the cannon, the Army launched a tactical fire study designed in part to determine what to do about the modified launcher in the entire portfolio. We haven't seen that study, the public. I'd like to see it. We concluded that the prototyping activity last year, unfortunately, was not successful enough to go straight into production. That's from that's from Doug Bush. He continues, I think. He'll continue later. However, the exhaustive tactical fire study revalidated the need for longer-range artillery platform. Hence, the service will issue a request for information shortly for full-up systems, platform ammunition, with the goal of conducting initial evaluations of those candidates this summer, he added, Mr. Bush. If those demos are fruitful, the service wants to spend $55 million in FY25 for more detailed comparison with plans to make a final production downselect in the future. Again, from Mr. Bush, he says it's a shift from developing something new to working with what's available domestically and internationally to get the range and volume. So we want to find a different way to get there. Right. Why are you going to develop something new when there's something already out there, perhaps? While that big shakeup, the IRCA effort also included development work with a mix of new munitions and a supercharged propellant. Doug Bush said the work on those fronts will continue for now, but did not detail the exact spending plan. Other changes coming to Army artillery portfolio may still be coming, but the industry should not look for clues in this budget document. Here's a bit about this tactical fire study from Mr. Bush. The tactical fire study informing discussions and debates, nothing is baked into 25, which of course was finished last year. So all the tactical fire study is not reflected in the budget. So if you're building a new 155 millimeter artillery piece, you got to wait till next year. Here's some aviation stuff. In February, the Army announced it was going to kill FARA, which we talked about, in the production of the UH-60V Blackhawk, continue to keep General Electric's improved turbine engine program in development, and phase out Shadow and Raven, which their day has come and gone. No loss there. The service predicts that those four decision points freed up $4.5 billion between FY 25 and 30, and they're going to reinvest that money in other areas. What are their areas? They are going to green light production on the CH-47F Block 2 Chinook. But Doug Bush revealed that the budget requests support production of 6 aircraft per year between FY 25 and 30. That includes addition of an MH-47 Chinook for SOCOM or USASOC, U.S. Army Specialized Operations Command. The service also plans to ink a new multi-year procurement deal with Lockheed Sikorsky for UH-60M Blackhawk line. Bush said that deal will likely cover 27, 28, and 29 with $800 million per year for 24 helicopters. Army officials also expect to spend more money on developing and buying unmanned aerial reconnaissance systems like Future Tactical Unmanned System, FTUAS it's called, and launched effects, but those changes were not discussed in length during last week's media roundtable. Almost done here. We still got to talk about the IVAS. For the FY25 request, the Army is seeking $1.2 billion for guided multiple launch rocket system rockets, GMLRS, $492 million to buy 230 precision strike missile increment 1. That's good news. 171. Wow, listen to this. That can't be right. Is this right? Can't be right. $171.7 billion for 155mm munitions and funds to buy 230 PAC-3 interceptors for Patriot. That's got to be $171 million because the Army budget is only $185 billion. So you can't spend $171 billion on precision strike missiles. I'm sure you could, but that's got to be million, not billion. Typo. Moving on. The service also plans to restart testing on long-range hypersonic weapon this summer. In FY25, the service is requesting $1.2 billion for hypersonic development and procurement activities. That I believe. Here we go to IVAS. We haven't talked about IVAS for a while. When it comes to close combat formations, if testing of the IVAS is positive, that's 1.2 variant. I don't want to go into all the other variants, but 1.2 is the latest and greatest. The service wants to spend $256 million for 3,162 units in FY25, along with $98 million for continued development. So $98 million for development, $256 million, for 3,162 units. The Army has also reversed an earlier push to stop buying the EMVGB, which is Enhanced Night Vision Goggle Binocular, and is asking for $100 million in procurement dollars for FY25. That's the best decision in this whole article. That EMVGB is a great piece of equipment, and thank God they reversed the decision to quit buying it, because it's probably the best piece of equipment on this whole list. And that's it. What am I doing on time? 23 minutes. That's a pretty short episode. That's what I wanted to do. So that's it. Like I said, the next few episodes will be shorter just because of stuff I got going on. So that's episode 240 in the books. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.